You mean just like do the intro?
Yeah, like just like start to someone start talking.
Okay. Hello everyone and welcome back to Gastroclass. I'm Caillou here with my co-hosts Gateways and Chill. Say hi everyone.
Hello.
Hi
boy,
everyone.
It's been like 10 months, huh?
Yeah, honestly, given how long I heard it took for the, you know, chapters 3 and 4 to come out, as a new member of the fandom, I'm glad it was only 10 months. But yeah, we made a lot of theories, and then, like any good theorycrafters, we knew, you know, when to stop while we were ahead, rather than, you know, keep digging into the point of obsession. But
I got a job.
There's a new chapter coming out. I got employed too. This is actually crazy. We were all it's crazy how little time you have for being insane about a video game when you actually have to do a 9-to-5.
I had a job the whole time. You guys just got to lock in.
Yeah, so there's a
well,
new chapter,
chapter
coming
five.
Out next week.
Yeah.
That's room just a week away.
And obviously, we are far from the only people excited about this. And so, I saw on Instagram an artist called Emmy's Art, E-M-I-I-S Art, we'll be linking them in the show notes, made a bingo card for crack theories about Deltarune's next chapter. And, you know, as crack theory connoisseurs, I came and begged Gateways and Chill to do an episode where we would each pick one line, column, row, or diagonal of this bingo board, and then make a cohesive chapter 5 theory out of it. Now, we won't be revealing, we know what squares we're working with. I don't know what your guys' plan is. I think it'll be more funny if we don't reveal what our squares are until we're done talking about our theory. But yeah, I think that in classic Gastroclass fashion, the hope is to make something that's both sincere and we're actually trying, but also at a certain point, it's gonna be a little shitposty, just a little shitposty as a treat.
And this is a competition, by the way. I don't know if those two know it's a competition, but I know it's a competition.
Oh,
when chapter 5 comes out, whoever is closest is the winner, okay? And that doesn't mean anything, but it means you're the winner.
So, you know, with that
we're
going to
kill each other.
Let's throw gateways to the wolves. Let's throw gateways on
go
the
go get
bus.
Them, champ.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, hi, everyone. It's so good to be back. I'm very excited to be yapping about some bullshit again. And yeah, so my vision for chapter 5, when I looked at my row or column or diagonal, because I guess we're being evasive about it, my immediate thought was, how can I make a cohesive story that fits in with like what I think the vibe of the chapter is going to be? What like what the like emotional character beats I think they're going to look like? And so where I kind of started with that was, I think this chapter is going to be about like Susie very specifically dealing with the fallout of the what she learned in chapter 4. You know, in the sort of advertising for this chapter, it seems pretty clear that Toby is trying to pitch this as like, oh, it's the last like fun adventure. We're going back to like the fun gang hanging out and having a good time, and like it's a moment of respite before chapter 6 and 7 kick our ass with the finale. And that's like a really weird beat to end on after the ending of chapter 4 being like so dramatically dark. So my thought process is like, how do I kind of combine these two worlds? I think that the like emotional arc of chapter 5 is going to be Susie like emphatically trying to ignore everything she learned yesterday and like put it in the past to try and do another fun adventure with the gang. And the chapter is going to be about her having to come to terms with whatever she learned, whatever the final prophecy is, blah, 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 in order to kind of reach an emotional conclusion at the end of the Dark World section in Chapter 5. So, let's just start with what I think the chapter is going to start off with. Number one key point, I think it is officially time for Azriel to show up in the game. From the beginning of the game, we learned that Azriel was meant to show up on the weekend. It seems pretty clear that Chapter 1 is on a Thursday, Chapter 2 is on a Friday, and Chapter 3 takes place over Friday night into Saturday night. There's only one day left of the weekend. Azriel is coming back on the Sunday that is that Chapter 5 begins on. So I think what the start of the chapter, or the post-Dark World section, but I think it's more likely at the start of the chapter, that we're going to have Chris and Azriel interact. Azriel's going to come home from college, catch up with everybody, with, you know, Toriel, and I think there's going to be some sort of impetus there that you know, gets Chris and Azriel to go over to Asgore together in order to, you know, for Azriel to see his dad. And I think that's going to be sort of the impetus for the Dark Worlds, you know, them discovering the Dark World. I don't necessarily think Azriel is going to the Dark World. I don't think that at all, actually. But let's say that's kind of how it happens.
He's just going to see it, and he's going to be like, I want no part of this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I you know, he'll go hang out with, like, Pizza Pants and Nice Guy or something, and whatever bullshit he's doing.
It would be interesting if, like, there's a lot of people, like, there's a lot of theorizing about, like, oh, what if, like, Dez and Azriel already had something to do with Dark Worlds when they were younger? It would be interesting if, like, Azriel, like, that could be, like, perhaps an interesting motivating factor.
Yeah,
if,
definitely.
Like, if it's just, like, Azriel's, like, Chris is, like, we gotta go, and Azriel's, like, no, I'm hitting the bricks. Like, I've done this before.
Yeah, I could definitely see something like that too. But I believe that there's going to be some sort of reason why Chris and Azriel are looking for Asgore. Something goes on. Susie's involved somehow. And Susie, Chris, Ralse, and maybe Noelle, I still have no clue on that front, are going to the Dark World. Let me think. I also think we're going to, in like the beginning of the chapter, we're going to get kind of like a pre-festival segment. They're, you know, they've been teasing the festival forever. I don't think we're going to start with the festival, but, like, I think you're going to get that, like, final everyone setting up for the festival. Like, maybe you can go check out the area where that's all going to be happening and talk to all of the different Lighteners to, like, you know, hey, what's up? Go through all of that. And I guess I can talk about one of my bullet points because it doesn't really make sense to go out of just mention offhand, but one of the pieces on my line is Cat Petters mentioned. As you guys might know, Cat Petters is the video game that Noelle plays. It's mentioned a lot in the sweepstakes, and it is specifically related to Friend, image underscore Friend, the sort of weird cat sprite that kind of follows you around as you do secret boss bullshit and mic bullshit and all that sort of stuff. If you believe that Friend is a character, is going to be a character in Deltarune and not like a Gaster in Undertale-esque secret, it seems very likely that we're going to have to get someone mentioning Cat Petters in canon in order to, like, explain what his deal is, why he's there, all that sort of stuff. I think it's very possible that, like, in this sort of pre-Light World segment, you get to talk to Caddy, because obviously there will be a Jockington mention in this chapter, as Jockington will grow the beard, as we've learned from pre-release content. Which, Jesus Christ.
Doesn't wear it well, I hate to say it.
No, it's a very ugly beard. Like, he could have done some work with it, but it does not.
This is realistic for a high schooler, though.
So. But yeah, so
I think he wears it well in the way that, what's the guy from that? Oh God, what's there's that movie character whose name is just the guy. What movie is that? The Big Lebowski. He wears it in a Big Lebowski way.
I don't think that's a good way, though.
No, it's not. Generally, when you're comparing something to The Big Lebowski, it's not because it's, like, cool.
I have not watched The Big Lebowski, so I'm doing this in a completely value-neutral way.
Okay.
Fair enough. But yeah, so I think at a similar time as we get Jockington content, Caddy could explain what Cat Petters is, or we know Noelle's going to be in this chapter. We walk around what seems to be the festival with Susie and Noelle in some of the footage for the trailer. Maybe Noelle explains what Cat Petters is before we get friend content going into chapters 6 and 7. So I do believe there's going to be some kind of mention of Cat Petters before friend becomes a real substantial character in Deltarune. So something happens and we enter the Dark World. Now, I really don't know much about the Dark World. I don't have many thoughts on what exactly everything's going to look like and what the story beats are going to be. But I want to take a second to talk about the secret boss of it all. So I don't know if anyone has heard of one of the weirdest fucking theories. I know you guys have, but I don't know if our listeners have heard of one of the weirdest theories in Deltarune, Woody theory.
It's pretty widespread at this point. At least it was in the pre-chapter 3 and 4. I don't know if people know about the hideous beast Woody it's evolved theory. Into.
Yeah. But for the uninitiated, Woody theory is this idea that in chapter 3, the secret boss was going to be a cowboy puppet from the old cowboy show that Asriel, Asgore, and Chris all used to watch. There was a lot of content in the newsletters about how there was cut content for a cowboy section of the game. And then some weird Tobyisms about that's just how cowboy shows go. There's cut content in the game files about a potential board 3 where there's a trivia question where Tenna learns for the first time that the cowboy puppet show has been canceled and is overwhelmingly sad about it. So there was a longstanding theory. And of course, there was a lot of Toby Fox content over the years before over the years before Chapter 3 came out, where he just had a lot of weird references to Woody from Toy Story. Another cowboy toy puppet, not quite a puppet, but you get the picture. So there was a longstanding theory that before Chapter 3 came out that Woody or a cowboy TV show character whose show was canceled was going to become the secret boss. And obviously Chapter 3 came out, that didn't happen. The secret boss was a video game / the night, but there is a new theory out of the ashes of the previous Woody theory that Asgore, new secret boss is going to be of chapter 5 is going to be Woody. I kind of believe this. So the evidence they have presented is basically there is also a TV in Asgore's flower shop. That has some of the old programs, I believe, that they used to watch together. I don't know that it's, I don't think the flavor text of the TV specifically mentions the cowboy puppet show, but it's not a crazy stretch to think of that the cowboy show would be related to the old TV that Asgore has, presumably an old TV from the Dreamer household.
Yeah, and we've seen that, the cowboy minigames in Tenna's thing, where it's for sure.
Seems to be based on the same thing. So there's something cowboys going on in the TV world. It seems like the theming for it was mostly discarded in Chapter 3, but there's a lot of hints that there is, more depth or importance to that cowboy TV show than they're letting on, than we saw in Chapter 3. So here's kind of where my theory gets a little cracky. I think something very key about the secret bosses and one of their common traits is how deeply uncomfortable they make Chris. Notably after the Jevil fight, I believe Chris is shaking after the Spamton fight. If you spare him, Chris will just scream into the void. After the fight, obviously the sword mini game where you get the black, what's it, the shadow mantle. Chris is like actively fighting against you as you enter the bunker in the sword route minigame. And in chapter 4, it doesn't really apply, but it's different because Gerson had basically not been corrupted by the shadow crystal. So my thought process is, there are a couple of things that we know makes Chris uncomfortable, and I think one of them applies to this dark world in particular, and could apply to this secret boss. I want to give you guys a crack at it. What do you think is something that might make Chris uncomfortable and be related to this dark world?
Moss?
Not Moss.
Their general relationship with their dad.
Well, that is true, but that's not exactly what I'm going
You can't
for.
Make that into a darkener.
You can't make that into a darkener. I do think it is something that is tangentially related to their dad, because their dad is known to have some interest in this thing.
Chris doesn't like anime.
Chris doesn't like anime.
Oh. I'm so smart.
Hear me out. What if we're not getting a cowboy puppet? What if we're getting a cowboy Bebop?
Okay.
Okay.
I like this.
I think that the secret boss is going to be an anime-ified reskin of the fucking cowboy of the cowboy puppet show that Chris used to love, and it's a memory of the cowboy puppet show that has been corrupted by anime. Now, I think there's actually genuine, like, I think there could be a genuine reason why Chris doesn't like anime, other than just like general nonchalance about it. I think that it seems very possible that Asriel is like an anime freak. I think that it's known that Asgore is getting into anime from Alphys. Alphys mentioned that, like, Asgore is watching Mew Mew Kissy Cutie 2.
How to draw dragons book that we
How to draw dragons. I think that also applies because, like, I think the dragon is mentioned to be, like, some kind
like
of
a game dragon.
Yeah.
And also, like, it's making fun of, like, the How to Draw Anime series of books that were popular at that time.
Exactly, yeah. So I guess my theory when it comes to that front is, I think one of the things that after, you know, Des's passing, it seems like there was a wedge drawn between Chris and Asriel. And, of course, that culminated in Asriel leaving and Chris not really having anybody. But I think it's very possible that there was, like, a gradual, like, lack of connectivity between those two in the wake of Des. And I think that one potential explanation for why Chris hates anime so much is that, what if Asriel got, like, really into anime and started ignoring Chris after the death of Des? And then what if Asgore is following along that same path? Because it's noted that he is, like, an anime guy. He has a bunch of superhero comics in his workshop, or in his, you know, flower room and everything, and those could be, like, shonen comics of some sort. Like, maybe Chris sees anime as, like, a representation of their family kind of moving away from them. So, this secret boss, I think very specifically, could be about, like, a core memory that Chris has with Asgore and Asriel, corrupted by the thing that pushed Asgore and Asriel away from them.
This is very funny. I'm into this.
I know it's weird, but I do think there's some sauce here.
I think there's some sauce, and I kind of want to, taking the anime angle, like, I feel like you can connect, like, the shonen anime thing to lots of what's happening with the soul as well, right?
How so?
Because what we see in chapter 3 is lots of, like, get stronger, get stronger, get stronger. And where, like, in a way that makes Chris incredibly uncomfortable, right? And I think it's, like, there's so much of, like, shonen anime is, like, the two pillars are like friend, the power of friendship, which I think that's not something that Chris is like opposed to, but there's also the idea of like this constant need to get more power, arbitrarily powerful, which is kind of what the soul is doing at all costs in both the weird route and what we see of its behavior, like the behavior in the in chapter three. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But so,
I like this.
But yeah, so I think that the secret boss is going to be an animeification of the cowboy puppet from the show they all used to watch together. And speaking of the secret boss, I also think that this is going to be the last secret boss. Obviously, as you guys know, in the malice screen for like creating new items, there are recipes that take 5 shadow crystals for. I want to say it's the pure sword or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like the number 5 is important when it comes to the shadow crystals. I also think it's going to be difficult to kind of intuit a time where you're going to be able to get shadow crystals during the roaring, if that happens soon. So I'm going to say this is the last shadow crystal, and it is the animeification of Woody Theory. So kind of going back to the core idea I was talking about in this chapter of like Susie kind of trying to run from the prophecy's ending. I think that you're going to see throughout the course of the chapter, Susie have to deal with that. And by the end of the chapter, I think that she's going to try and like come to terms with the prophecy, you know, being able to stop the prophecy, but not like trying to actively run away and hide from it. And I think that the end of chapter 5 in the Dark World could be where we learn what the prophecy ending is. I think that, you know, that would kind of tie into this theming idea I have for the chapter, where it's about specifically running away from your problems versus like confronting them and like finding a way to move forward. And I think that theme is kind of very clearly paralleled with Asgore's whole deal, where he has all these problems and his solution is I'm going to make flowers about it.
It really ties like, into the
well, his solution is also to
overall
themes like,
too. Yeah, that is also Delta.
Yeah, like his solution is like alternately avoidant and incredibly obsessive, which I think
exactly.
is a. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good representation of lots of characters in the game.
Definitely. And I also think, like, trapped in asylum, Asgore trapped in asylum could mean that maybe he's, like, that Susie's arc is paralleling it in a way that his goal is to just, like, stay in the Dark World forever, be the king of his little flower nation, and, like, trap himself in the confines of this world he's created. And I think that the end of the chapter is going to be Susie coming to terms with that and teaching Asgore, like, hey, we can both stop running from the thing we're running from. And I think at that point, once Susie stops running from the prophecy's ending, she will let us know what it is. So I think that the Dark World, it's going to be like a positive ending to the Dark World story. We are going to get the sort of end, or not end, but like a conclusion to Asgore's arc in that sense, while getting a conclusion to this mini arc from Susie. And I think we're going to learn what the prophecy is. And then I think that once we come out of the Dark World in chapter 5, I think the festival will start immediately. Like we'll get to go to the festival proper. So I think it'll be another
is where everything goes down kind of deal.
Yeah. So I think we're going to have a long Light World segment. I think that this is where we're going to get to go back to the Castle Town. I don't think we're going to get to go to Castle Town at the beginning of the chapter, because it seems like way too miserable to like pop down into Castle Town without Susie. And like for that point in the story, in terms of the tone, I don't think it would make sense to like go back to Castle Town and have Newbert going Super Saiyan like 2 minutes after the roaring happened almost.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think that this is where we get kind of all of those like Newbert and the trash can and that weird big guy with the tires, and like other related content in Castletown. I think that then we're gonna get to go to the festival proper, walk around with Noelle, some weird route bullshit is gonna happen in the weird route, of course. And I think that the finale of the chapter is going to be I've kind of always long held this theory, even for like since like the chapter came out. I've always thought that the chapter 5 is going to end with someone opening a fountain in the middle of the festival, and that chapter 6 is going to be going through Hometown as a dark world, and chapter 7 is going to be going through the shelter as a dark world.
Yeah. So,
that is my vision for chapter 5. That's kind of as it pertains to some of these bullet points, but also as it pertains to kind of like a concept for what the story is going to look like. And yeah, so my row, I guess I can reveal my squares at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my row that I chose was the final Shadow Crystal. Asriel returns, ? Woody theory, the reveal of the prophecy ending, and Cat Petters mentioned.
Other than anime Woody theory, I think this is all pretty normal and believable. So yeah, like, good job.
Honestly, okay, you know what? I'm going to be real. I think anime Woody theory is the part that I felt like, damn, this is actually kind of cooking with fire and gas.
No, I think it's good. I think there's something there to like the Chris hates anime isn't like a gag. It's actually an important story beat. And I think that Asriel coming back could like get us content for that specific theory. So maybe it's not anime Woody, but I think anime will be important to Chris's arc in more than just a gag way.
Yeah, I could also see it being like, yeah, because it's a type of thing where to not make it like a redo of the Tenna stuff, I like the Asriel angle. I like the idea of it being the sort of like, yeah, I more than the Asgore thing, I like the idea of it sort of being like a Des Asriel angle, because that is, we see lots of, I think we do see lots of the nerd shit through the lens of Alphys, but also through the lens of like stuff we hear about Des and Asriel having done in the past,
mm-hmm.
or like offhandedly. So, yeah, like do I think that Asriel is coming back for Shurzies? Eh. I think it would be a cool angle. Absolutely.
Oh, I think Asriel is 100% going to be in.
I think they
5.
Wouldn't. They wouldn't mention, oh, Asriel is coming home for the festival tomorrow, if it wasn't either going to happen or like be important that it doesn't happen.
Well, or like I guess the way I think, I don't think he's going to be around for most of the chapter. I feel like it's going to be like that's the chapter for Stinger in some fashion.
Okay.
Like, or they've done a good job of like hiding him in like the promotional material and stuff. But I the way I kind of feel about it is just that like, because I think we just get to see a lot of like Asgore's thoughts on like Dez's disappearance and mm-hmm. worries about. No, maybe having Asriel for that would be kind of interesting as a firsthand thing to his dad's obsessiveness when stuff first came down, and also some. But I feel like Asriel is my thing. I feel like just Asriel would know too much. I don't know. This is getting off tangent, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think Asriel knows much about Des's disappearance specifically. It's to me, it seems like that was a Chris and Des specific thing.
Interesting.
I think Asriel would know about as much about Des as Noelle.
Mm, okay, you know what? Actually, framing it that way makes me feel like that's a possibility, yeah.
But yeah, I do think that it is weird saying that Asriel's coming back, because like it would be crazy to be like, oh, hey, that's me, like the Des Knowledge Factory. Like, what do you want to know? But I also just think in terms of the dialogue we're getting, he's not going to be talking about it willingly.
Mm-hmm.
So it is like in a weird place. But I do think that I do think he's going to be there. That's like a genuinely held belief. I think Asriel is 100% in this chapter.
All right. Kai, are you ready to rock yours?
Yes. And I'm gonna tie things together as much as I can. But where I want to start is I want to start with a humble purveyor of donuts. In chapter 3, which I think is the hardest egg route to find, you go onto the egg route there. You get to talk to a man who tells you about his schedule. So on Thursday, he sells donuts and puts them in the bin. And then on Friday, he tosses the leftover in the dumpster. Saturday, he lets them cool on the windowsill. And on Sunday, he harvests the wheat, which lots of people have figured out connects to where are each of the chapters, right? We got dumpster in chapter 2. We got the window, the giant windows in chapter 4, which comes up to Sunday, I harvest the wheat. Now, I don't particularly care about where the egg is going to be. I'm not going to be like, oh, because of this, I think that this is where the egg is going to be. Now, I harvest the wheat as an action to everything else. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot because you haven't done a lot of talking this episode. If you were to ask what you think, like, the process of being, let's say a baker, let's do a baker, or like, let's say like a, okay, I don't baker. Know, maybe you make pizzas or something. Yeah, what do you think your daily or weekly schedule looks like for making that thing, for making some sort of baked good?
Baked good. You got to get there really early in the morning. I know this because I'm friends with people who work at bakeries, and they complain about how early they have to go into work because they have to make stuff that's fresh for people who are buying stuff for breakfast in the morning, and that sucks ass. So you get there really early, and then you have to, you know, you get a bunch of flour, you get the water and oil and anything else that's going in the dough, you make the dough, you put it in the oven, you set everything out, you turn your sign to open, and you wait for people to come in and buy your things.
Mm-hmm. And at no point during that are you going out there and, you know, milling your own flour, right? Like,
no, then you'd have to go into work even earlier.
I'm saying, like, I'm not even talking about, like, you don't have your own grains that you're making your own bread out of.
Oh yeah, so that would be bad.
That's why it's, yeah, so sell the donuts, left cool on the windowsill, harvest the wheat. Bizarre, which when you read it, you're just like, oh, that is like, that's it. Yeah, it's just an activity. But then if you look at it, it's like, huh, this is really bizarrely out of place. But I think that it's deliberately supposed to be a little odd because I think it is hinting a little bit at kind of what I want to talk about as the overarching themes for chapter 5, which is ends and beginnings, which I also think plays into what the eggs are about. You know, we've got the whole thing of like, dude, what came first, the chicken or the egg? I think you could pull it into that. And also, where else have we seen something that talks about origins a lot? Or maybe not a lot. Let's just say, like, what is a really prominent and fandom theorized thing about origins?
Like where the prophecy comes from? Or like Gaster the person who controls the thing?
We might get to that later, but it's prophecy related.
Gaywiz, do you have any idea what he's going on about?
Is this maybe about like the origin of darkness That's not really an origin thing.
No, they, I'm talking about the roots panel, the prophecy.
Oh,
which I think is something that has been, which has attracted a lot of, obviously speculation, Deltarune fans. But I think what sets it apart, I think, is that how people have noticed, rather, because lots of the other lines are maybe not straightforward, but they are, they seem to be meant to be taken as part of like a longer story, right? Whereas roots is just a place, it seems to be just a single word, a place, which there's other panels which follow this example, like the gallery, but it being hidden and also seeming to have, like, motif-wise, it seems to connect to, like, visually, it looks like the shelter. There's a mention of, like, children, like, there's a secret message about children lost in the forest. We have the whole thing about the music files that are named Roots and the implication that Roots could be a future music theme. So a lot happening there for people to sink their teeth into. And what really got me interested in it when thinking about chapter five is, again, coming back to this seemingly innocuous harvesting the wheat, because I think it is, again, really out of place and seemingly whatever action, but it is getting back to this is where the process starts. This is where everything happens. Now, I've been rambling on a lot about end and beginnings here, but I'm doing it just to sort of set the stage for why I think this is significant or potentially meaningful in like a meta sense. What does this actually mean for the chapter? So I think in the chapter itself, lots of people have like a much better predictions about like very specific things that are going to happen. But we know that Asgore is going to, it's going to be relevant to Asgore in some way, that it's going to be a dark world in his place. We know there's going to be a huge plant motif, you know, plants, flowers, roots, wheat. I think that these are tangential, but also like there's been similarly tangential things that are like relevant motifs in previous chapters. And I think it also gets back to where everything began in this story, which is what happened to Des. So I think that there is a lot of focus about like the flower man trapped in asylum and like Asgore as like, and his like family relationships, which I think will be important. But I think where all of that like broke down was with his failure to find Des. Like we know that he became like obsessive over it. He still kind of is from that one time where we can like look through his window and he's like, I'll do it this time. Like from the conversations we can like eavesdrop on him in like the household. So, and we know he's got like a crazy, like, or from the sounds of it, we know he's got like a, I forget, because you can like see into his room at one point, right? And he's got like kind of like conspiracy board type setup in there. Am I misremembering that?
Yeah. And there's an NPC that comments on like, it too.
Yeah. And then he also has the, it also seems like where he is in Carol's room also has this similar conspiracy board set up.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm actually a little surprised that this doesn't come up as much in the conversations about Asgore House Dark World, because we see it in his house, and it's sort of like the most interesting and relevant part of his character that isn't just like a surface level thing. I think that I think there's something to the idea of getting back around to what you were saying, Gateways, where it's like Toby, like there's a whole idea of like it's going to be the happy chapter before everything goes to shit, but I sort of don't believe that, right? Because we have so much indicating that chapter five is like the last chapter before, like the last chapter that exist that that's like kind of exists in a meaningful capacity with regard to like lots of the stuff that happens. Like it's the last thing where we have in the same getting back to harvesting the wheat, it's the last thing there where we have a schedule for like the or like a hint for the eggs. It's a last thing where there's a where Gerson has a subtitle for the chapter. We know that there's allegedly in Lords of the Hammer
there is a sixth chapter, but
we don't know anything about it. We also know it's going to have the last of the Shadow Crystals, most likely. So there's a lot that's like pointing towards something happening in or at the end of chapter 5 that like blows stuff up.
Yeah, definitely. And I also want to say... I think that like when I say that the chapter 5 is going to be the happy chapter, I don't actually think it's going to be a happy chapter. I think it's going to be like kind of similar to like Tenna in chapter 3, if that was every character, a like facade of happiness and good vibes over shit going down. So I definitely agree that like there's going to be some fuckery here and like some serious stuff. I think that just the how the characters treat it is going to be based on like trying to put up a facade.
Yeah, and I think that like a similar way to like a flower, it's like it looks very pretty on the top, but then like if you go down into like the roots of it, it is like there's just a lot of dirt there. And I think literally, right? Because I think that is going to be I think that is sort of going to be the thing where it's like you start off in like the flower shop and like things are like kind of great and like Susie's having a great time, everyone's having a good time, and then you get into you go into like the side, is it like the basement or just a side room of
it's just like his back room.
Yeah, you go to his back room and it's like, oh, these are like, what, Chris, why are we fighting against fucking case documents kind of thing? Where so far, like, Des's disappearance has been like, I think haunting the narrative is overused, but I think that is like a pretty fair description of it. I think that this is probably the first time it's going to come up explicitly. And I think that this is kind of like that is going to be the serious portion of the chapter that sort of spirals things out, that it's going to be related to what ends up happening to some degree, which I don't know what is that. I have no clue. But like overall,
Give your thing a snappy name here, because Gateways has anime Woody theory. Have you gotten to the part where you would have a snappy name?
Yeah, I think it's like chicken and egg beginning and end, because I think that like, so I think that Deltarune as a story likes to play play into the idea that like it's self-aware about what it's referencing, right? It references like classic JRPGs, like the story structure therein. It has several playable sets. You play playable, like it's a very story, like, hint, nudge about structure of how these go. But also has like Chris and the soul as this very odd sort of like we're along for the ride, but also there's clearly some discord about how exactly the soul and Chris want the story to go, right? Which we see in the weird route where the soul tries to give Noel the thorn ring, and there's sort of like a like there's lots of theories that like the soul is like trying to prevent like bad stuff from happening, right? It's trying to like save the world at any cost. the reason I think some of this is like interesting comes back around to roots and its placement in the prophecy. Because I think if you take the prophecy as like a literal in-world prophecy, there's a lot to look at it. But I think it's a different angle I've been thinking of is if it's really interesting if you think of it like in a meta sense, as like the script for a video game, the script for Deltarune. Like, because that if you're in the world of a video game, what would like the story of your world would seem like a prophecy, right? Like the everything that happens would seem like, oh my god, they know everything that's going to happen. Especially like you have like the very standard thing of like we have to save the world against in this alternate world against these titans. But I think what's going to happen at the end of the story is, at the end of chapter 5 is, the prophecy is going to come to pass in a way that is actually like good or something, where it's like, oh my god, things go great, and actually everything seems awesome. But somehow, like, the meta elements, like, there's clearly some agenda that the soul has, or some agenda that like Chris has in addition to that. So I think that there'll be something where they're like, actually, no, we don't want, like, there's something that we don't want in regards to the prophecy or the script going quote unquote correctly. Like there's a different outcome that's supposed to happen. So I think that chapter 7 are like outside of the scope of what's supposed to happen, quote unquote, in the story. Whereas like at the end of chapter 5, it's like, actually, can we just like reset on this? Can we go back to the beginning of this chicken and egg story? Can we go back to the roots of this?
Okay, sure.
Did you say something?
Oh, when you said, never mind. I'll cut this out. Keep going.
Oh, you thought I was saying that as like a show note? No. But yeah. Include like lots of that rambly thing. I think that what will end up happening is some sort of like attempt to break free from the grip of the narrative, but not in the way that originally thought, where it's fighting against the prophecy happening at all, which is how it's set up at the end of chapter 4, right? Where it's the idea of like, we can't let the prophecy happen, et cetera, et cetera. Where rather it is, what if like everything goes great and everything happens as it's supposed to, but this like happy order is for some reason undesirable, which I think we start a little bit with like a thing of like get stronger, like we need to. It's like there's like a constant theme of like from both the WD Gas or whatever figure, like the figure who talks to you at the end of like if you lose in the night fight, to the way that the three plays out. There's like an emphasis on like traditional RPG thing of like get stronger to win the game at any cost. So I think that like winning the game in chapter 5 will be a bad thing, and the soul or Chris or both will try to like reset the game, and that's sort of why the chapter structure is so weird at that point. I think that's also stuff like the freedom motif comes in, where we have this idea of like all of these characters trying to like break free from the confines of the story, and what the Shadow Crystal actually is will probably be the actual way to access chapter 7 in some way, right? Like in a very like narrative sense, that would like scan as the story plays out normally unless you can find a way to escape, like use subvert and use these characters whose whole entire thing is we are trying to seek freedom in some way. Now, to tie in the last parts of my theory, I think that this is going to be because so much of the end of chapter four has this thing of like, yeah, you know, we are friends and we will, and if we just stick together, things will be fine. Because of like, so much of Susie's like development as the hero is based on, I have my friends with me and nothing's going to stop us now. And then the end of chapter four, you have this thing of like something happening with the prophecy and Susie being like having some of that faith shattered a little bit, or maybe not, like something shakes her in a big way. Now, I have no idea what's going on with the prophet, but just thematically, I think it would be interesting if part of that is like Susie's faith is in some way challenged by having to fight Chris or Chris as the soul just when she thinks that, okay, we've done it. We've managed to do the thing we were trying to do. We are saving the dark world from this dastardly dark fountains. And for some reason, Chris cuts in at the last second to cause some issues. And I think that, like, thematically, I've been thinking that, like, there's going to have to be some sort of, like, schism in the party at some point. And I think that this would be a kind of a perfect opportunity along those lines of what does the soul want versus what do the characters in the world want? So I think that, I don't know if this will happen in chapter five, but I think that, like, it might end with maybe there being a schism and you and like you as the player having to fight Susie, which I think would be very interesting given that, like, again, for the past few chapters, she has been sort of like set up as like your one hope against lots of, like, if you're fighting the Roaring Knight, she is the one doing damage. She's the one like talking shit and giving dialogue. In chapter four, she's also like a big source of like actually being able to do anything, if that makes sense. Like she is there's a lot of like parallels to like the idea of determination, which was so important in the first game. And so to conclude this sort of meandering theory, I think that Deltarune has a lot of motifs about the start and end, the cycle of starting and ending of stories. Actually, God, there's one thing I even didn't get to say earlier, which is about the moss, where the first time you eat the moss, it says you can choose to perpetuate the cycle of existence by eating it. So Deltarune has a lot of plant imagery. That plant imagery is related to cycles of existence and starting and like the starts and ends of those cycles. Chapter five has like a lot of ominous stuff about it, like just mechanically being the end of the story. I think that like the way that plays out in the meta sense of Deltarune as a game within a game as a narrative is going to come to a head in terms of the character interactions and thematics in that way. Yeah. And also, you also get to meet Papyrus. Because Papyrus will be in the shelter.
Go fuck yourself, dude.
That's true. He's going to be in there. He's going to be in there. Trust the process.
I originally had like a way I was going to type Papyrus in here, but I was like, I don't fucking know.
And throw him in there. Who gives a fuck?
Okay, and no. Oh, and I want to be clear that So my row is harvesting the weed, Susie and Chris fight, free space, Roots explanation, and Papyrus hang out. And I really wanted to do one of the things that had a free space just to talk about freedom motif. So that was my choice for including the free space in there. I want to point out that the free space on this bingo board has two big pink and blue stars and a small yellow dot. You know what characters are associated with those colors?
The pansexual Chris, flag. Both... Oh, shit.
Well, that too. Susie and Chris, who both have shown the most agency, and then they're just a small dot for Noelle, who has rapidly dwindling agency. Whoa.
So it's that's actually the dot that appears at the end of chapter 4 in the weird route. That's what it represents. You got to lock in on this, Caillou.
Exactly.
It's the soul shard.
For sure. Anyways, that's pretty rambly, but comments, questions, concerns before we move on.
Until you got to the papyrus bullshit, I think this is just like normal good analysis.
I will say with the papyrus thing, I think that brings up an interesting question in like, what role is Sans playing in this chapter, and like, do you have any thoughts on that, or is it just like a question mark kind of vibe?
I actually forgot about Sans, but I think that like the idea of him as someone who has recently come from far away and is just visiting, given his role as like an investigator of other timelines and other in the first game. Again, there's very much a feeling of like this being an experiment, like this whole world, right? Like it's almost like a little too, like the world has stuff going on, but it's like, why is it just this small town? Why is everything so well curated? What's up with the literal like guy commenting like, yes, yes, I'm observing you. Like, It's giving like nuclear testing site, and I'm not talking about like some crazy thing of like, oh, they put a nuke here and that's where the monster came. I mean in the sense of like, it's like this perfect idyllic suburban setup that feels like the type of place that they would like, you know, like we're gonna test out like some nuclear thing here just to see what it does to this town. It has that like weirdly like, I don't know if that makes sense, but like it has that weird setup of like a little too idyllic to make sense as a real place as opposed to like a facsimile for experiments to happen. So coming back to Sans, I feel like I have no clue what Sans's involvement here is. I almost wonder if Papyrus is actually there, right? Or if it's just like, you know, because we never see him. And if Papyrus isn't there, it makes sense that like this is just Sans coming from like a different timeline or different whatever for some reason. Which again, that's such crack theory, but I think that it is like I'm trying to tie Sans in, and I'm trying to tie in this whole feeling of things restarting and things like that. Sans is Mr. Let's do this again guy, Mr. I'm aware of timelines guy.
He's from the interplanar Bureau of Timeline Management.
And I'm like, but I don't think he's going to be important because I don't think Toby Fox would do that, you know? So I don't know how to feel about that. Yeah.
All right. Well, anything you want to add before I move on to mine?
No, I've already said too much.
All right. Well, I am going to start explaining my stupid bullshit here. So I didn't come at this from an angle of like, what do I think is going to happen in chapter 5? And how can I, like, what row fits this? I just came with the row that I could, like, tie stuff together in the way that I thought was the most fun. But I don't know, I might be on to something here. So, chapter opens. Festival day. Great. Everyone's there. Everyone's having a good time. And we mean everyone. We mean Onion is there too. Last time we talked to Onion, they were like hearing the sounds from the sea, and they were like going to come back and talk to us, and then they didn't show up at all since then. Onion's going to be back here, and it's going to be suspicious because they're not talking about that at all. They're pretending like nothing happened. They're acting a little weird, right? Okay? The unifying theory of my row here is a theory about goners. And it's that goners are like copy replacements of characters who are going against the prophecy. If you are going against the prophecy, you get replaced with a goner who will be like more obedient to it, is the idea. So this ties into a couple things. So when darkeners are in a dark world they're not supposed to be in, they turn into these gray stone statues. And, you know, copies are monochrome, big theme, goners are all monochrome. The idea is that this is tying into lighteners trying to go against the prophecy. They also become this, like, gray copy, not supposed to be here, character like a goner. Jockington being a goner is something that, like, was a common theory at various times. And the one Jockington dialogue we've seen from Chapter 5, he's talking a lot closer to how he did in Chapter 1. So my thought is he, like, has been replaced with a goner because he was trying to defy the prophecy by not growing the beard. We see him now, he's grown the beard and he's acting more normally. He's been replaced by this goner version that is following the prophecy, right? And the thought is that Onion would also be a goner because somehow the player knowing about the song from the sea, they weren't supposed to know about that or something like that. So Onion has also been replaced. And this is like, you know, a big kind of building conflict in there. One of the things that really inspired this was the spelling of Birdly on this bingo board is not how Birdly's name is spelled. It's spelled with an I. And longtime viewers will remember misspelling theory, how we have this sort of theory about things being spelled differently or letters being rearranged, representing freedom or breaking away or things being changed. My thought is Birdly with an I is a goner version of Birdly, right? And so when we see this bingo square that says Birdly Japan jokes, that is Birdly as a goner. And my thought as to why he would be replaced by a goner is because Birdly doesn't seem to be mentioned anywhere in the prophecy, right? He's just kind of there. He's trying to insert himself into this story. I think that he's going to continue to do that, especially as we go into Chapter 5, especially as we go into Japan world. He is going to continue trying to insert himself into the prophecy, and as being someone who is going against the prophecy by doing that, he is going to be very much our, like, frame of reference character for this happening to a main character to establish this as, you know, something really important like that. So as we keep going through the chapter, this becomes, you know, more and more of a thing, and we get to the secret boss, right? We get to this important thing. I'm sure you all have watched the Roots Theory video. It has, like, a bajillion views. So Friend Fight is one of the squares. I think that Friend is somehow responsible, like an agent of the prophecy who is facilitating this. Maybe he works for, or I don't know if, I shouldn't assume that Friend is he, maybe I'm a bad person, works for Gaster / the prophecy / is facilitating people being made into goners. I think that that fits with, you know, a friend being associated with the device being associated with Gaster, and Gaster being associated with the prophecy. And that ties into the square, we are the angel as well, because the prophecy is framing the angel as an antagonist. They have to banish the angel's desire. The angel's heaven is a bad thing. We are the angel. We are trying to subvert the prophecy because we don't want the bad thing at the end of the prophecy to happen. Presumably we are framed as, you know, the player liked the characters in the game. They don't want the tragedy to happen if they can avoid it. So the angel is an antagonistic force as presented by the prophecy. We are trying to stop the prophecy from happening, right? So at the beginning of the game, like the thing in the game, like, at not counting all the ancillary stuff that has to do with goners, is the goner maker at the start, right? It is choosing your vessel, what you want to be controlling in the prophecy before they get thrown out and replaced with Chris. My thought is that vessel is going to be, if Chris does not obey the prophecy, what will replace them, right? And I think that as we get to sort of the climax of the chapter, that is going to be something that starts to happen. Chris does not want something bad to happen at the end of the prophecy. Chris probably doesn't know what it is, might learn it during the chapter, but might not. But either way, is going to try and go against the prophecy in some way, right? And so perhaps this is sort of a gradual transformation, like sort of a corruption that like takes over you rather than being like a separate entity that replaces you. It's something you get turned into, right? And so the last square on my bingo row is Chris loses hand, which notably is not loses, it's looses, which was probably not intentional, but I'm going to play off as loosing as in like freeing it. You are actively doing something to like loose it, to make it loose, to like set it free, right? Chris loses hand. My thought is the hands, as the hands are a symbol of Chris's autonomy, right? It's how they play piano. It's how they, you know, they interact with the world. You interact with the world through your hands. And piano is the biggest thing about that. It's the biggest symbol of Chris's autonomy. Losing a hand is a symbol of Chris's autonomy being lost, which not only happens with a player, but what happened if they were being replaced by this weird goner version, right? So Chris's hand is where that, like, goner corruption starts happening, where they're like, okay, you are not obeying the prophecy, we're going to get rid of you, and we're going to start, and it starts at the hand, or maybe that's where they first notice it. Chris will do anything, like, will sacrifice anything about themselves for their friends in this hypothetical, and so cuts their own hand off, sacrifices their own autonomy in order to continue defying the prophecy and preventing whatever tragedies at the end of it, a very selfless hero type act, right? That is all of my bingo squares. This is my unified theory of gonerness, I guess. I don't really expect this to be true, but I thought this was a fun way to tie together these bingo panels. And if any amount of this is true, I am the smartest guy in the world, and you all have to declare me the winner, okay? Just so we're clear on that.
Yeah, definitely not.
I think that there is. Again, I didn't consider the goner part of it, but I really do think that, like, there's something to the idea that, like, there is, whether it's Gaster or whatever, there is some higher force that is, like, that wants this story to go in a certain way, and the idea of, like, Gaster or gonerification as, like, a punishment or as, like, a naughty actor get put in the...
Yeah,
exactly. And like, but it is interesting as like, I wonder how much like Chris might be aware of it, but I wonder if other people are, or if it's just sort of like a, it's almost like, again, like thinking of the whole thing as like almost like a fake or like a set. It's almost like, oh, we got to take these people out back and like fix them before we can put them back into the game type of thing. Again,
We have some weird overlap, like, between our stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that like what I said had like too much original in the sense of like there is something fake and there's like a, like, because again, there's the whole, like, I think you even mentioned it, there, like, the device theory where it's the thing of like the game is like sort of like a black box that is being observed, or, and like it's like a, like, however you want to interpret that. I think that the tying the goner stuff in was very interesting, and obviously we love the return of misspelling theory.
Oh yeah, that's a classic. I think that is my favorite episode we've done.
Yeah, misspelling theory is great. So I have three things I want to kind of address. One of them is an observation. One of them is a pitch, and one of them is a question.
Okay.
Okay. So question for you. Do you have any thoughts on the weird guy in the library who seems to be becoming a goner, and how this might relate to the gonerification theory?
Well, they seem to be trying to avoid, like, whenever you see this person, they're trying to stop you from going somewhere. They're trying to stop you from going up to the library. They're trying to stop you from reading the books further to the left, and they're trying to stop you from talking to Onion. So I know I said that Onion, like, telling you about the song from the sea is not part of the prophecy and they get turned into a goner for that, but maybe they are getting turned into a goner because you are supposed to be going up to the library, reading those books, sitting by the lake, maybe to hear the song for yourself rather than talking to Onion. But I think that because the things that we see them doing are like blocking the player from doing things, that this is potentially very simpatico with the idea of like, if you are stopping the prophecy from happening, you're going to get gonered.
Have we talked about... We've talked about Kingdom Hearts on this podcast at some point.
Yeah, that was one of the lightning round ones. Yeah.
Okay. I once again remember that, like, this really does feel very Twilight Town from Kingdom Hearts 2. It is so Twilight Town. Like, the idea of, like... this fake town where people are like where no one is real and it's all like, and people can be swapped out with like versions of themselves that are like, again, the whole thing is just very Twilight Town from Star Kingdom, because it is, for those who haven't played Kingdom Hearts 2, spoilers, the idea is like the villains of that game have put like Roxas in basically like this simulated version of a world where he has all these friends, because they're like, we need to keep him occupied, or we need to sort of like keep him away from stuff happening while other stuff happens in the real world, and also we kind of want to harvest it. We want to like hide him away from other people who might try to find him. I don't think it would be a similar thing in this, but I think the idea of like a big simulation where it's all like kind of a Truman Show thing, where it's all made for a specific sort of like goal or benefit, that seems to line up a lot and kind of interests me. So,
do you think Toby Fox has played Kingdom Hearts 2?
Almost certainly.
I wonder.
I don't know. There's a lot of RPGs out there.
That's fair. I would. The things I would do if he, because I haven't played Kingdom Hearts, but like I feel like if he hasn't played it, I don't know what we would do. I'd be so shocked.
Real.
I guess he probably has. I think like we talked about this last. Anyways, Gateways, what were your other thoughts?
So, here's one observation. Regarding Chris Ham, I think that there's a very poignant connection between Chris's hands and the defiance of the property, which, or the prophecy, which is very... The property?
Bud.
Yeah, I think that Chris's hands are very specifically tied to the defiance of the prophecy, because Chris's hands are the vehicle with which the soul is removed. So I think that it could be that specifically, like the hand that Chris uses to like put into their chest and to take the soul out is the one that's getting removed, because this gonorification is basically saying like, no, we need you to be alive and be you. But like, you can't be taking the soul out. We're gonna like cut that shit out. And so any sacrifice by which Chris cuts off their own hand to protect their friends would also be like symbolically I am locking this soul in my body in order to keep everyone safe. Like, I will no longer have any autonomy. In both the sense of like, you know, all the piano stuff that you talked about, like, but also like the ability to remove the soul from their body. So I think that's important, potentially. And then my pitch was for Birdly, because I think you make a good point about like Birdly in some way being able to be a part of something that is against the prophecy. But I don't think it's what you think it is, because I think there is one very clear instance of Birdly being in a situation that is not in accordance with what the prophecy is, and that's him being snowgraved.
Yeah.
I think that in the world where Birdley becomes a character, is like, what if in the weird route, Birdly just shows up as like a character, and no one but you like, treats that as weird. Like, everyone is like, oh, Birdly, like, glad to see you're doing okay, like, or doesn't even remember that he was in the hospital in the first place. And he's just, like, up and doing okay, and, but, like, notably weird. So, that could be something, I don't know, but that's the pitch I wanted to make.
Yeah, or no, he's totally.
Like, or he's like, this is just, wow, I love subversion, but I think it would be interesting if it was like, Birdly keeps trying stuff, and then it's like, you're being annoying. We're actually going to write you out of the script. And so Chris is the only one that remembers because of the soul, but everyone else is like, who is Birdly? I have not heard of this guy before.
Yeah, definitely. So something along those lines, but yeah, yeah. So, but I think that, like, he definitely has relevance to the prophecy in the context of the Weird Route, and also in the context of what you mentioned, but that could be how it's handled in the Weird Route versus how it's handled in the main route.
Yeah, I didn't really delve too deep into the Weird Route in this, just because it felt like such a different thing that I didn't want to, like, delve too deeply into it, because I think it's pretty obvious that the Weird Route is going to have a lot more significance in this chapter, more so than it's had since chapter 2.
Yeah, and I think stuff is diverging so much that it's hard to predict.
So what was your question?
The question was the library guy. So those were my
Yeah. Opinion. Got it, okay. Yeah, Caillou, do you have anything to say about this that hasn't been covered?
No, I like it.
Sweet. Okay, that about wraps it up then. We've got our three bingo rows / columns, and now it's just a matter of waiting. I guess this is like the season one finale in a sense. Or maybe it's like a holiday special, and the holidays is 1 week before chapter like 5 comes out.
I think it's like our episode 0 for season 2, almost.
Sure, okay. Yeah, it's like an inner, it's a middle thing.
It's a, here's what you missed last time on Glee.
It's exactly like that. Thank you all for listening. If you've listened this far, we will almost certainly be making some more stuff when Chapter 5 comes out, so look forward to that, and we will see you around, I guess. Bye-bye!
Arrivederci!
Bye! Don't let the goners bite!